Blog Talk Radio.
Source Nation, welcome to Healthy Cooking with Chef Keith, as he shows you how to prepare homemade delicious meals that are budget-friendly and easy to make. Source Nation, here is your host, Chef Keith.
Welcome back, family. Welcome to another episode of Healthy Cooking with me, Chef Keith. And I am going to show you how to make a tasty and easy to make gumbo. And I'm going to use a slow cooker because a lot of my recipes are for those of you who are busy. They might not have a lot of time to prepare some of these meals that could take a very long time. But what I'm going to do first is start off with some onions. And I'm just going to dice the onions up nice and easy. Like I have, I'm using one white onion. All right. So I'm just going to go ahead and continue to dice. Get a nice fresh onion. Hopefully your day is going well. Okay. Alright. And so, I'm going to go ahead and dump my onions into a bowl here. Move on to my celery. All right, do a little chop on the end here. All right, so chop here. All right, we got a nice celery chop. Continue to chop up celery. I'm using 4 stalks here. Alright. You don't have to have itsy bitsy pieces, but you want to get them as small as you can. You can use a food processor at this point if you want as well. And last, I got my green pepper here. All right. Just gonna tear that out. Tear out the middle here. I like to keep the seeds. I don't know if I'm the only person, but I like to keep the seeds and the peppers, and I put them in some potting soil and start to grow them. And now that the weather has changed, I am likely to start planting some outside as well in the garden. Why buy seeds when you buy them every day if you're buying your fruits and vegetables, right? Okay, so just go ahead and chop up my green bell pepper. All right, so go ahead and chop this up. All right, we got our bell pepper, 1/2. All right, let's do the second half. You can have. Now, I'm going to make some variations to this dish, but you can't have gumbo without these ingredients. You can't have gumbo without bell peppers, onions, and celery. Or it's not gumbo. I guess it's just stew. All right, so give it a chop here. So I have 1/2 cup of butter, just under medium, a little low. And so what I want to do here is start with 1/4 cup of flour. 1/4 cup of flour. And the trick to this is to continue to stir where everything gets all incorporated. You want to get the flour mixed in really, really good. But you don't want to start this roux and then walk away. You got to stay with it, because if you get any burnt pieces in here, any burnt pieces, then you have to start all over. So you don't want to cook it too fast, and you got to keep stirring. It could take about 10 minutes, could take longer depending on what temperature you have it on, but the whole point is to get this roux right here to be brown. You want it brown. And this is actually, I got a good deal on some organic butter. It's unsalted. You just want to continue to stir. Smells good. Like I said, it's a process. You want it to turn it almost so it looks like chocolate. But it takes some patience. So don't try to rush it. Don't try to heat it up too fast. You just got to continue to go until you get the color, not the consistency, the color you want. And you want it to be a brown color. Almost like chocolate. Okay. So this is the color that you're looking for right here. So at this point, what we're going to do is we're going to take our bell peppers, our onions, our celery, and we're going to put them into the roux here. Remember, we're cooking in a slow cooker today, so we're not going to have to saute everything all the way down. We're just going to get everything nice and incorporated in here. So what I'm going to do, I have everything on low. Just going to have my roux select here. And at this point, what I'm going to do is use a quarter cup of white wine here. I'm going to add a quarter cup of white wine. So I'm going to continue to mix this down. Collect all the tastiness out of here. I'm going to turn it up a little bit. But I didn't have it up too high. Make sure I'm not burning anything, because you can still burn that roux up if you're letting it sit too long. So I have that nice incorporated. I'm going to remove this from the heat. Let it marry together for a second. So I'm going to turn the heat off on that. Alright, so I got some turkey andouille sausage here. So I'm just going to go ahead and so I have some turkey and I have some regular, so they have too much of one thing. You can choose whichever kind of smoked sausage you want to have. What I'm going to do is cut the pieces down using a whole package of the smoked sausage here. Now, some people cut them in discs, like coin sizes, and that's fine. I'm going to make mine a bit smaller. For me, that makes it easier to meld inside. You don't have to have any big pieces. So, this is how you make a little bit go a long way. So, I have little chunks I'm going to get here. Just gonna chop it into little pieces. And I'm using chicken in this recipe as well. Okay. And continue to chop. Chop, chop, chop. And for those of you who are just tuning in, you're watching Healthy Cooking or listening to Healthy Cooking with me, Chef Keith, on the Source Radio Network. All right. And here we go. All just a chop. All right. So there's our sausage ready to go. All right, so I put about two and a half pounds of boneless, skinless chicken thighs into the slow cooker. There's our sausage. Next, I'm going to add our roux. Our roux and our vegetables to the top. Tablespoon of oregano, a tablespoon of cumin, tablespoon of cayenne pepper, tablespoon of paprika, 2 tablespoons of pepper, 2 tablespoons of salt. So I'm just going to mix them all together. I'm just going to pour those on the top. Now, I'm going to add shrimp to it, but that's not going to come until the very end. So what I do have is 3 cups of broth here. Right there, I have my slow cooker on low. Let me give it a good stir here. Give everything a good stir. Like I said, I'm going to add 1 can of stewed tomatoes. I'm going to add that in a minute. But what I'm going to do now is add a couple bay leaves. I want to check for these bay leaves here so you can fish them out later. Just bought these, so. Alright, so I'm gonna put. Well, that's like a half right there, so I'm gonna put. Alright, so we got 2 and a half bay leaves right there on the top. I'm gonna make sure to look for them. I don't wanna be too small. Don't wanna have to find them later. So I'm gonna put the cover on. Put the cover on, got it on low. We're gonna cook this for about 2.5 hours or more. You're gonna check the tenderness of the chicken. And at 2.5, I'm gonna dump some shrimp in here to finish it off and keep the shrimp in there for a little bit longer until it's nice and pink and cooked through. But right now we're gonna let this cook for about 2.5 hours on low. Then we'll come back and check it again. Okay, so what I did here is I put in about 1/5 cup of cornstarch, some pepper sauce, a couple tablespoons of pepper sauce, 1 tablespoon of sugar. And all I'm going to do here is take a little bit of the broth there. I'm going to put it into the cup here. And I'm just going to mix it up and stir it a little bit. Now, I'm using this in place of filet powder. There wasn't any in the local grocery store that I was in. But I probably could have found it if I looked hard enough. But here you go. So, I'm just going to pour that into the mixture. I took out my bay leaves for a second, too. and I'm just going to pour in one can of stewed tomatoes. All right. So just going to give that a little stir. Give it a little stir there. I can get some of the chicken up there. And give that a little stir. And I'm going to put my bay leaves back on top. Alright, so that's going to be on for a couple hours. And we'll come back and check it and add the shrimp. Alright, so what I failed to mention was that I put in 2 tablespoons of minced garlic in here. So what I'm going to do real quick, it's been cooking right now for about 3 hours. So what I'm going to do is just grab the bay leaves out the top here. I'm going to put them back in a second. Ooh. So, I'm going to go ahead and take a couple bay leaves out right here. And we're going to take some shrimp. I have 2 pounds. So, let's see how much. And this is a
Source Nation, welcome to Healthy Cooking with Chef Keith, as he shows you how to prepare homemade delicious meals that are budget-friendly and easy to make. Source Nation, here is your host, Chef Keith.
Welcome back, family. Welcome to another episode of Healthy Cooking with me, Chef Keith. And I am going to show you how to make a tasty and easy to make gumbo. And I'm going to use a slow cooker because a lot of my recipes are for those of you who are busy. They might not have a lot of time to prepare some of these meals that can take a very long time. But what I'm going to do first is start off with some onions. And I'm just going to dice the onions up nice and easy. Like I have, I'm using one white onion. All right.
Help Hey, good evening, my Source Nation family. This is Vita McNeil, and we are live television. I know you guys are used to me saying radio, but we are moving up. Things are looking up for us, and we are now doing television live. So thank you guys for joining me today. Again, my name is Vita McNeil Wright, and you are tuned in to The Right Workout live on Source Nation Television. So if you guys would like to advertise with us, please contact Kathy B at Kathy, K-A-T-H-Y, Lynn, L-Y-N-N, 1971, at gmail.com, or Treacy Jeffcoat at gmail.com, T-R-E-C-I-E, Jeffcoat as it sounds, J-E-F-F-C-O-A-T, at gmail.com. I got to thank my sponsors before we even get started. As you can see, we're not going to be jumping up and down today. Next month, June, is actually National Health and Wellness Month, so we'll be jumping up and down the entire month, but there are some issues people have that I have to address. So when I'm emailed, I must address the issues. Now, I want to thank my sponsors, Lena Health, Wellness and Fitness, Paper to Film Productions. I also want to thank Revolution Meals and Renovations. And I want to thank you guys for joining me. I'm going to be moving to an awesome studio setup. So hopefully you guys will rock with me and want to check out The Right Workout with Vita so that you can kind of see how I get down and what I do when I'm not jumping up and down. There's more to me than just fitness. So, but what I'm going to share with you today, I got an email from someone, and the question at hand was, what do you do when you come to a plateau of sorts? And a plateau is actually when you've been working out and eating right, and you're in your fitness journey, and then all of a sudden, you know, and the weight was coming off really, really quick, right? Maybe. And if it was coming off really, really quick, you still do the same exact things because you see that it's working, and then all of a sudden, it goes to a halt, a screeching, traumatic, dramatic halt. And you kind of go, okay, what is going on? What am I doing wrong? What do I need to do to get over this hump? You know, a lot of people call it the stall. A lot of people call it a plateau, which is what I like to refer to it as. So when that thing is happening to you, what I prefer that you do is, you know, try different things. That's what'll break the plateau. When a plateau happens, it's usually because you've been monotonously doing the exact same thing, and your body's going, okay, well, I'm used to it, so I'm not going to respond anymore in this huge, huge way for this person to, you know, try to progress in their weight loss. So one of the things that I actually recommend for you is to cut back on your carbs. Now, if you're already losing weight, I'm sure you cut back on your calorie intake. You know, cutting back on your caloric intake is a big, big deal when you're trying to lose weight. Now, you do still have to have complex carbs, things that are, you know, still good for you that your body can burn off as energy. But if you cut back on your carbs a little bit more, it could increase your fat burn. Because, you know, a bunch of carbs will decrease your fat burn when you're working out, especially the ones that aren't good for you. You know, so that will help you in to move forward out of that plateau. A low-carb diet increases your fat burn, and it ups your metabolism. So I'm not sure if you guys use that, but it will up your metabolism, which is, you know, the rate at which you burn food so that you can, you know, excrete it out of your body. So actually cutting back on your carbs will help that a lot. So if that's something that you know you need to do, if you know you're intaking, you know, carbs and calories that you shouldn't be intaking, try to stop that, and then maybe that will get you over the hump. Once you do that, once you cut back the carbs, like less carbs kind of produce what we call ketones. I'm sure you've heard of that because some people have diets purely based on ketones. And that may lead to you eating less because that's the hormone that you produce that makes you think you're full. And then what will happen is you won't want to eat as much, so your caloric intake will go down doing that in itself. So, you know, if you lower how much you intake, I'm not saying starve yourself. Just don't take in so many carbs, okay? There are several different ways to do that. I mean, it'll help you not be so uncomfortable when you don't eat as much. So that's another thing, because sometimes, you know, you can lower your carb intake and then you're hungry, 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 okay? So my next tip is actually, you know, something that I recommend for everybody to do. Now, if you've been working out and you, like, say you walk 3 times a week or you lift weights 2 times a week or whatever, right? That's your workout regimen for the week. Well, I think that increasing the frequency or the intensity of your workout could actually help you a little bit more. So what that means is if you're already walking or doing whatever, walk with weights in your hands, walk with weights on your ankles, things of that nature to up your caloric burn. So what will happen is if you intensify it a little bit more, you'll burn more calories, and that'll get you over the hump. Now, if you walk 3 times a week and you only lift weights twice a week, switch that up a little bit. See, what you have to do through a plateau is figure out what way to shock your body back into losing weight again, which means do something totally different. So if you're already walking or if you're already doing anything, aerobic exercise and strength training, maybe a little high-intensity interval training will help you to actually get where you need to be. So if you're already in a workout regimen and you've come to that stall, you know, try to do some intervals. That's, instead of doing your normal workout, like, you know, let's say you go to aerobics every day for an hour at LA Fitness or wherever you go, try to go out to the floor, to the weight floor, and maybe, you know, get on the treadmill for 30 minutes or the elliptical for 30 minutes and then go lift some free weights as opposed to going to your class. Like, try to do different things or implement them into your workout. You can actually add on to what you're already doing, and that will probably help you out tremendously, as opposed to, you know, not doing as much. Now, for me, because I'm always exercising all the time, and I know there are people out there watching my show that are like me, maybe what you need to do is work out a little bit smarter and not so much harder. You know, I start doing things like I'll lift weights on a particular day. One day is just a day for cardio. You know, I have shoulders back day, I have leg day, then I have chest, biceps, you know, day, and then I have back day. You know what I mean? I try to split up my workout a little bit so I can give my muscles time to regroup and rebuild, that whole thing. And that actually helped me a lot. Another thing that helped me a lot in getting over a plateau was I started doing intermittent fasting. I don't know if anybody's familiar with that, but we did talk about fasting on here before. Intermittent fasting is when you go maybe 16 to 48 hours of just not eating any food. Now, I'm not recommending, you know, the faint of heart do this, because if you're already having a hard enough time not eating a lot of sugars and a lot of caffeine and things like that, then I don't recommend this for you, so don't try it. Hey, Andrea, I see you watching. How you guys doing? So what I want you to do is to try to maybe increase your workout to, you know, if you're already doing 20 minutes a day, increase your workout to 30 minutes a day or maybe to 45 minutes a day. Now, if you're a person who's always doing, you know, cardio kickbox or, you know, any of those things, try a sculpting class. Try a Pilates class, one that just totally focuses on your core and things like that. That is a major, major deal. But what I really want you to do is just try something different. Like I said, the intervals will work for you. If you decide, you know, one day you're going to do some HIIT training, then what you would do is get you about 6 really, really great exercises like burpees, jumping jacks, push-ups, sit-ups, step-ups. You can do all those things, and what you do is you do them all for 1 minute. And you do about 4 rounds of all these exercises for 1 minute. Now, that may not add up to 30 minutes. It may be 20 minutes, but it's going to be a hard, hard 20 minutes. And that will change the course of your workout because you changed the intensity of that thing. You turned it up. So that may be, you know, what you need to get you over the plateau if you're a person who loves intense workouts, okay? Remember, exercise will help increasing the intensity or the frequency of it. Tracking your diet will help you. And by this, I mean keeping a food journal, writing down exactly what you do. And I'm talking about being completely honest with you and everybody else. Sometimes we do that whole thing, but we're not honest. I know a lot of people who keep food journals that will lie, 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 lie. That's not going to help you. So keep an honest, honest, honest food journal so that you can see what's going in. Also, to fine-tune that thing even a little bit more, figure out what your blood type is. There are books that you can get that are called Eat Right for Your Blood Type books. Figure out what your blood type is, and you can actually tweak that diet that you've written down a little bit more because you may be eating some things that you would think are healthy foods, but for you, they're not in your beneficial food group. They may be in your, never eat again food group, and they may be in your neutral, which means you can eat it maybe twice a week at the most. You know, because when I found out that chicken was not in my beneficial, which was something I ate at least 3 times a week just because of the protein, and I didn't want red meats, blah, blah, blah. But guess what? For my blood type, O positive, eating lean meats like steaks, you know, things of that nature, you know, lamb, I could eat those things because I could process them. Most people can't process those things. So when you find out little things like that after you do your honest, honest, honest food journal, then you can fine-tune and modify your diet accordingly. And that may be the thing that helps you get, you know, from your plateau. So hopefully that'll work for you. Another thing is to not skimp on protein. A lot of people skimp on protein. You should have protein at least about 40 grams a day. So if you get 20 over the course of most of the day, you know, a little bit after lunch, maybe after 2 or 3 o'clock, you should have at least 25 to 30 grams of protein already. So that when you eat dinner or, you know, your last few meals, those are things that you don't have to worry about. So increase your protein intake, because what protein does, it boosts your calorie burning when you start to work out. That's the beauty of it. Also, it stimulates the production of hormones that reduce your appetite. Like we were just talking about the ketones. Yeah, it does that whole thing. So, hey, Andrea, how you doing? I'm so glad to see you. Sorry we're not jumping up and down today, but I promise you, next month is Health and Fitness Month, Health and Wellness Month, and we will be jumping up and down a lot next month. So I'm so glad you decided to join me. And, you know, everybody else in my Source Nation family that are checking me out right now, I love when people say hi. I'm sorry it throws me off, but I love my people. We were talking about increasing your protein, like don't skimp on your protein. You know, we're talking about reaching your plateaus and how to get over them when you're stalling in your weight loss after you've, you know, started your journey. Oh, yeah, protein actually protects you from muscle loss, because what happens is the protein feeds your muscle, right? Because think about it, if you don't put any protein in your diet, then your body has to use something for energy, so muscle starts to eat muscle, which is crazy, but that's what happens. So don't allow that to happen to you, so make sure you know, don't skimp on your protein, and that may help you get over your plateau, okay? That's another one of my tips. Another one is to manage stress, people. Stress will kill you quicker than cancer. I'm just going to put it out there. You do with that information what you want to do. But stress actually increases the production of a hormone that you won't like at all, called cortisol. Cortisol actually sits around your soft areas, and it makes its own fat. So you don't want cortisol. So try to de-stress a little bit, because your stress may be what's keeping you, you know, in that plateau, in that stall that you're having with your weight loss. Because let me tell you something, if you create that cortisol and it's sitting around your waist, plus you eat bad, you know, it makes you want to eat comfort foods. You know, it makes you, you know, it gets your spirit down. It makes you not want to go anywhere, be around people or work out or be around sparkly, lovely people like myself, which would be a detriment to society. You should always want to be around people like me, yeah. So, anyway, try to de-stress. You know, some stress reduction strategies that may help you is to get incorporated into a yoga class or a stress meditation course. What helps me in the morning is doing some stretching, meditating, speaking to the Most High, whoever you worship to. You know, be grateful. Say positive affirmations to yourself. Whatever helps you to get over that hump so that you're not stressing yourself out, bogging yourself down with a bunch of, you know, negative issues and things that you can't fix anyway. Get rid of those things and move on into a beautiful day. Try to de-stress every day. I'm talking about in the beginning of the day, in the middle of the day. Those are things that you need to try to do. You know, like I said, yoga class has really, really helped me. I used to think it was a slow thing and I'd go to sleep and blah, blah, blah. What I did not know was I needed to relax. That's something I wasn't good at. I wanted to get it crunk, get it going, get it, you know, go get it, work out, do everything. Just jump up and down all day. And then what I found out was, at the age that I'm at now, I need to work smarter and not as hard. Yoga is a thing that will keep you with the tone, you know, because I like to have a little tone in my, yeah, your girl likes her muscle tone. I do. Some people don't like that, but I need you to know that I work out and I know what I'm talking about. So I love that. And yoga gives that, plus it gives you breathing techniques, stretching, it gives you so much, and it's actually strength training. A lot of people don't know that. So that is a stress relief strategy for me. And maybe you're going to talk to a therapist because you got some issues that are underlying that you won't identify yourself. That might be a stress management thing that you need to try. So think about those things and get rid of the stress, okay, people? The person that asked this question actually led me to do some research. So I really, really appreciate it when you guys, you know, email me or, you know, send me messages. I really do appreciate those things because you make me stay on top of my game. Now, another tip to reach, you know, to get over your plateau or the stall that you're having in your weight loss journey, avoid alcohol. No nutritional value, people. I know. I'm, you know, guilty of drinking a glass of wine or two, but that's the problem. A glass of wine or a beer or anything, maybe like 100 calories. But just think, if you're in a social event, you're not going to drink one. You're not going to just have one drink. You're not going to just have one glass of wine. You're not. So let's stop lying to ourselves. You ain't going to just do that. And if you do, you're sitting there barely dipping your lips in it, and that ain't no fun. That ain't cool at a party. So you're not going to 9 times out of 10 do that. So try to avoid it at all costs. You know, for the most part, if you don't drink alcohol during the week and you have a couple of glasses of wine, you know, because they do have antioxidants if it's red wine. Thank you. I just thought I'd share that with people who know I drink wine and drink it with me. All right. So, but alcohol has no nutritional value. I'm just keeping it real with you. So that's something that you need to avoid when you're in your fitness journey. It may lead you to overeating or, you know, or to making bad food decisions. You know, like poor food choices. Like if you're somewhere and you're drinking a glass of wine and they got wings on the menu or pastas on the menu, 9 times out of 9, once you have impaired your judgment by drinking some alcohol, you're going to make a bad decision about your food. Keep it 100, people. You know you're going to do it. I do it. You know, I'm not one of those trainers that go, I don't drink. I don't do this. I juice. I do smoothies. No, I have issues like you, which is why I love when you're in touch with me, because you make me know there are particular things that I should be doing and shouldn't be doing. Why I'm seeing particular things, you know, if I start putting on weight around my waist, I have to think about it. Yeah, you've been drinking too many glasses of wine. Your nerves have been bad. You have been. Cut it back. Don't do it as much or don't do it at all if you really, really want to see some results. It's kind of up to you how you get down, okay? I can just tell you, you got to do it. You have to put in the work, people. You know, stop waiting for the magic to happen. If you didn't magically put that 50 pounds on over these years, you ain't going to magically take it off unless you go have some surgery, which sometimes that's not going to work. And even if you do it, you're still going to ultimately have to work out. So why not do it now? Save that money. Do something awesome with it, right? Get your new wardrobe. Anyway, let me get off my soapbox and back to the issue at hand. Eating more fiber will help you get over a plateau. If you reach one where you can't lose weight and you're doing the same thing, try to eat a little bit more fiber, especially a soluble fiber, which is one that, you know, you can kind of mix and it dissolves in water. That's a good fiber for you because it actually slows down the movement of the food through your digestive system, right? So it makes you feel full longer. Isn't that a nice trick? Makes you feel full longer, and then you don't feel like you have to do as much. You know, you don't have to eat as much to feel full. So another thing that you need to do. This is the most important thing, and if you hadn't heard anything else I've said this entire time, listen to this. You have got to, and I mean got to, get some sleep. You have to. That is one of the biggest issues that I have. My wheels turn all night. And it got to where I was asking my doctor, I was like, I work out so much. I do this, I do that. I told her everything that I did. I manifest. She made me write it down and told me I need to calm down. I would say everything that I did. And she said, well, I ain't hear nothing about going to sleep in the middle of any of this. And I hadn't even really thought about it because I wasn't sleeping. I mean, at all. I may get like, you know, 2 or 3 hours of sleep a night sometimes. And then I'm waking up groggy, talking crazy to my child. The next morning, she's getting ready for school. Not realizing that the reason why I'm so grumpy is because I'm not getting any rest. My muscles, my cells didn't regenerate. I didn't, you know, my mind didn't relax at all. I'm still on go, 100. I could teach a class at 2, 3 in the morning because I'm still there in my mind. Taking a hot shower. I can't do that right before bed. I have to calm myself down first. I got to read a book, you know, I have to do some meditation, some positive reflecting, some affirmations, those things in order to, you know, make it happen for myself because otherwise I will never wind down. So I have a routine that I have to do maybe 2 hours before I'm trying to go to bed. Otherwise I'm not going to go to sleep because I'm thinking about what I have to do for somebody, when I have to do it, what time I got to be there, how long I got to be, what I have to do to make my child and my husband's life better before I go. And then when I get back, you know, I don't want to have a lot of stuff to do, so I try to get everything done before I go to an event or a speaking engagement. So, you know, sleeping is, you know, really, really hugely important in that whole thing. So, you know, I hope you guys understand that mentally, physically, and emotionally, sleep, you know, actually the lack of sleep will deprive you from being at 100%. So that is one of the most important things because, you know, even your food is still even digesting, you know, in your sleep. Everything has slowed down. So a thing that I did learn, too, was no caffeines, you know, for 3 or 4 hours before you go to sleep. You will not have digested it. It will not have run its full course. So you're still going to be, you know, if you're drinking coffee and things like that really, really late, you're not going to be able to go to sleep. So don't do that to yourself because my mind fights it all the time because I'm thinking, okay, I'm just going to drink a little bit of coffee and then I'm going to, you know, stay up and write this article for this magazine or do this thing for this person or whatever. Then I end up staying up 4 or 5 hours longer than I want to because the caffeine did not go all the way through my system. So, you know, that is, you know, one of the things that I know I had to do was to go to sleep. And I'm talking about like deep sleep, like REM sleep, like dream sleep. I hardly ever get there. Like, for instance, this morning, let me see, I had a client like 5 in the morning, right? So I said, well, I'm going to go back home, get into bed because I'm super tired. You know, I got a bunch of stuff to do this afternoon. So I said, I'm going to do that, and then I'm going to go back and lay down. Well, I came back to lay down after my 5 about, I say, maybe 7:15, 7:30, right? Lord Jesus. Guess what time I woke up, y'all? About 11 o'clock, 11:30 this evening. Like, well, it was still morning, but it was almost afternoon. It scared me to death. I woke up and thought I had been in a time capsule. But guess what? My body finally gave out. It was like, okay, you barely went to sleep last night. You're going to sleep today. And I'm talking about I was out of it. I mean, if somebody came to the door or came, you know, even my daughter had come back in the house, I would never have even known because I'm talking about, like, my body shut down on me. And so I'm telling you this to tell you that if you don't rest, you're going to be at unrest all the rest of the day, and it's just going to be a perpetual cycle of never relaxing. And that's a part of what you need to do. I'm so sorry that I got to keep it real with you. You know, and the other thing that, you know, works for me is my happy place is the gym. Couldn't figure it out. I kept saying, why do I go in there and try to kill myself? And I'm happy about it afterwards. Serotonin, endorphins, wonderful hormones, things that happen after you work out. So those things make you happy, and they actually, you know, help you in your emotional state, you know, your spiritual state, physically, everything. So, you know, getting rest will help you to get into your happy zone, because if you're not rested, guess what? You're not going to work out. I don't work out on the days that I'm not, when I'm sleepy. Like today, I was like, I'm not working out today. I'm not. I trained somebody, but that's not my workout. So if you get the rest that you need to get, which is 7 to 8 hours a night, which I'm just going to tell you the truth, whew, I pray to ever get that much sleep. So if I could ever do that, I'm pretty sure, whew, I'm pinging off the walls right now, off natural energy. Just think if I get a little bit of sleep, y'all going to be in trouble, whew, especially y'all people in my class. So, you know, that's one of the things that I recommend to help you get over your plateau, if that's what's happening to you, because you will stall. You know, things will happen to where you kind of go, you know what, I don't feel like it today, I don't want to, I'm not going to, or whatever. But in order for you to have the energy that you need to sustain yourself throughout this fitness journey, you have to properly eat and properly rest. And those are the things that are most important. Now, you can fine-tune some things here and there, like increase the intensity of your workout or the frequency of it. Those things will help as well. But for the most part, you got to eat right, you got to rest, and you got to move, period. You know, I know I'm always, you know, on my soapbox talking about you getting moving. But, you know, some people, it's hard for them to stay in their fitness journey. Some people, it's hard for them to continue in it once they're in it. You need somebody to hold you accountable. But maybe you need to hold yourself accountable. Write down what you eat. Write down what you do. If those things aren't working for you, modify it. Adjust it. Put things together to where it's easy for you. Your gym is accessible. Your classes are accessible. You're around people like myself who love you, and you know it. That's why they're hard. You know, that's why the workout is hard. That's why they ask you questions or single you out in class or say your name. You need those sorts of things to help you, you know, get out of your plateau. If you've never taken a class before and you're in the local area, on Tuesdays at 6 o'clock, I teach a free class at Lee Street Park in Jonesboro. So for the city of Jonesboro, they're offering these wonderful, wonderful classes. A lot more people need to do that so that people, you can encourage people to work out. Because I have people in that class that are workout junkies, from people whose grandmothers is in that class with them who've never worked out before. And I teach every fitness level. Now, if your instructor cannot do that, if you, your grandmama, and your child can't go to this class, you might want to find you a better instructor. I'm just saying. So I hope you guys will, you know, try to join me on Tuesday when you're not doing anything. We do it rain or shine. And it's in, like I said, Lee Street Park in Jonesboro, Georgia. And you can come check out your girl, Miss Vita, for, you know, and it's free. The city cares enough about their citizens to actually give you a free fitness class. Take advantage of it, people. I'll be there, and I'm going to give you everything you need to move forward in your journey. And if you need to spice up that workout a little bit, Some of the moves that I do, I show you how to do those moves so that you can go and do them on your own and you don't have any problem doing them. So I'm glad you guys decided to join me once again. This is your girl Vita, and you're tuned in to The Right Workout, and we will be jumping around. I promise. We will be jumping around again soon, but I got to thank my sponsors again, and they are Zelina Health, Wellness, and Fitness, Paper to Film Productions, Renovations, Revolution Meals. And I want to thank you guys for joining me. Hey, all you people from Arkansas and Chicago and all my I'm so glad you guys to join me. We are so happy to have you. Now, again, I'm your host for The Right Workout, Vita, and you will be seeing some wonderful, wonderful things from me. Like I said, if you want to advertise on our show, you can always, you know, contact Kathy B, KathyLynn1971 at Gmail, or Treacy Jeffcoat, and that is TreeCyJeffcoat at gmail.com. So if you want to advertise on any of our shows, you guys got to really, really check us out. And if you need to jump up and down, you can always go to our YouTube channel at Source Nation Live Television, and you can check out some of my workouts. But I have to address questions that are asked. So I want to thank you so much from the bottom of my heart to the person and who wanted to remain anonymous who asked the question about how do I get over my plateau. I've been working out for a while. I hope this answers some of your questions, and I hope you'll tune in again next Thursday at 6:30 to holler at your girl. It's been a wonderful, wonderful Thursday. I hope you guys have a great, great, great weekend, and I hope you'll get some movement in. I hope you will move like you love yourself. I hope you will eat like you love yourself. I hope you will drink like you love yourself. I hope you will speak like you love yourself, and then I hope that you will actually go and love yourself. So I love you guys, and I will see you next week. You have a great weekend. Thank you guys for joining me again. This is your girl, Vita. Peace. I'll see you next time.
Welcome back, Source Nation. You're listening live to Healthy Living with Dr. Julissa. And you're live right here on Healthy Living with Dr. Julissa Hernandez. Now, tonight's conversation is a timely conversation, Source Nation, because we're going to be speaking on in vitro and understanding the naturopathic way to infertility. Now, you guys know what time it is. That's right. Dr. Julissa Hernandez is here in the studio with us, and I am so excited to bring her in. And we're going to have a dynamic conversation. I do believe that Dr. Julissa is here in the studio with me. Dr. Julissa, hello and welcome to Healthy Living. How are you this evening?
I'm feeling divine to be here with you once again, my dear friend. Feeling divine. Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm excited to have you. You know, tonight's conversation is a timely conversation. We're going to be speaking on in vitro. And the reason why I really want to discuss this topic, Dr. Julissa, I actually had a young lady reach out to me in reference to infertility. Now, she is a 33-year-old woman, soon to be 34 years old, and she is in her career. She's been working very hard, but yet she realizes that she wants to have a family right now. And she mentioned to me, she said that this is something that she has thought about in vitro and wanted to find out the pros and cons and really understanding if this is something that she should do or if there's something naturally that she could do in order to have children. Now, I don't believe that she's ready to be a mommy right now. She's just trying to get information. And when she's ready, she wants to make sure that she can conceive naturally and have the babies that she wants. So let's talk about that. What are your thoughts?
First, I commend her for thinking of these different ways to be able to make sure that she's going to be able to have that baby that she so desires. And she's thinking about this at a good time, not waiting till later in life when the struggle may be a bit more difficult. So in her 30s, I absolutely understand her concern there. I will be, in order to answer her questions, will be referencing my new book, The Naturopathic Approach to Fertility. So for those of you that have it, I will be referencing specifically the chapter titled Why Take the Naturopathic Approach to Fertility, and beginning on page 18. What I do share there is even a case study of just one of many patients that I've helped in my 23 years in practice in helping couples conceive, and that as of today, it's a blessing to have a 100% success rate in helping couples to achieve that baby that they so desire. So with the in vitro, the challenge lies in that she's going to have to inject and the risks that come about with, for example, miscarriage. So if I may, I'd love to share some of that research and insight there that may help her with her decision.
Please do.
Okay, wonderful. So as far as an example of a patient that I treated, a patient by the name of Karen, who was also 33 years of age at the time, and she was also married. She did come to see me for a fertility consult on May 11th, 2011. She'd undergone two very expensive IVF procedures, and the challenge was that when she did her first procedure, it weakened her uterus to the point where she miscarried. Upon her second IVF procedure, she miscarried once again. And all of this causing much heartbreak, causing much stress and tension between her and her husband. So the challenge is that, first of all, a woman that has to go through the IVF has to use fertility-stimulating medications, the side effects, side effects alone from just the fertility-stimulating medications involve challenges such as the bloating, cramping, painful breast tenderness, the persistent headaches and migraines, which sometimes are extremely debilitating. There's heavy vaginal bleeding that a woman has challenged with, a lot of pelvic pain that comes along also with doing the procedure leading to the IVF. They'll see blood in the urine, challenges with the urinary system to where they feel that it's a constant UTI as well. That was one of the symptoms that Karen, for example, had as well. Even if she's young, she'll start feeling hot flashes and mood swings because of the fertility-stimulating medication. And then there's increased risk of fevers, 100.5 degrees to, Fahrenheit or so. I would say that the biggest issue with the IVF treatment is that the birth success rate decreases with a woman's age and with each repeated IVF cycle that she does. So remember, for example, just that one patient of mine, because I do share a lot of patient stories here within my book so that women can relate, and men as well can relate to some of the challenges. So, on top of that, to add to an expectant mother's heartache, the rate of miscarriage, just as Karen underwent, she underwent two miscarriages, the rate of miscarriage through IVF is 20 to 30% greater than pregnancy through natural conception.
Now I want to stop right there. That's very interesting. And let me ask you, the doctors that are performing the IVF, are they sharing with the women that are interested in this type of procedure that this could happen, that miscarriage could happen during the procedures? Talk to us about that.
Right. That's a great question, Kathy. What I can tell you is that if a woman or a couple asks that they want to know all of those side effects, they should be told of everything. All doctors are different. These are my colleagues as well, I will say, even though they are of the conventional medical field, very different from alternative medicine and naturopathic medicine. But I feel that both realms of medicine, in other words, should exist, but in certain procedures, definitely a naturopathic approach is the best way to go when you consider a lot of the detrimental side effects. Mm-hmm. We're talking about, just in the example of Karen, my patient, who at 33 underwent these challenges. The first IVF weakened her uterus so much that that's why she miscarried the first time. and then having the second idea, miscarried again. And her husband, as they were sitting in my office, told me he did not want her to go through that again. Now, this beautiful couple, I must say, she was like the spitting image of Iman. They were a beautiful couple from South Africa. And just a few months later, she did conceive and had twins, one boy and one girl. Of my 23 years, though, please let me say this right now, it's the only couple that has ever had twins. So I cannot promise that. However, that was a blessing indeed.
Yes.
And so it was beautiful, beautiful story to share within my book. And she's allowed me to share that story, and that's why she gave me permission to put her story in my book, and it was a great thing to share.
Indeed, a blessing. Now, let me ask you, in reference to in vitro, we understand that there are different cycles of treatment. How long are they actually in the process of trying to conceive? How many cycles of IVF would they normally have to go through?
It depends on the woman.
Really?
It depends on the couple. It depends on the couple. She was feeling absolutely weakened and in pain, and after those cycles, the husband was the one that said, we need to consider a different approach, because he told me in the office, I do not want her going through that again. So the other challenge is that they have to use fertility-stimulating hormones.
Okay.
And then in addition to these drugs and the side effects that I've just mentioned, that use of those medications can cause ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome, which will cause the ovaries to become very inflamed and painful. Okay. So these medications actually stimulate the ovaries to produce eggs. And however, it's difficult to say how much medication a woman actually may need. So they tend to over-medicate themselves constantly.
Okay.
And then too much medication is what leads to this OHSS, the ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome. And then it causes the ovaries, as I said, to become swollen, painful. And along with this, development, some women notice extreme weight gain. So now, apart from that, she's feeling bad about herself, her self-image, and so on and so forth. There's abdominal pain, shortness of breath, and even vomiting. So all of this distressing, along with that, development of the OHSS because of the stimulating medications that they have to use. So apart from, these distressing symptoms, IVF can cause decreased urination frequency. So she's retaining a lot of water.
Right.
The woman then also, with the process of IVF, will develop nausea, vomiting.
Mm-hmm.
They have feelings of dizziness, faintness, as I mentioned, the shortness of breath.
Okay.
With the weight gain, what they tend to gain is about 10 pounds or more, literally within 3 to 5 days. Within 3 to 5 days of beginning those sorts of medications. And then you have the additional risk of bleeding, infection, and damage to the bladder or even the bowel.
Mm-hmm.
So that's from the IVF and IVF procedure itself. The next challenge, many forms of the assisted reproductive technology, ART as it's called, but specifically IVF in particular, women who finally achieve conception, they face other increased risks. So again, there's the likelihood of miscarriage. I already mentioned that, and that's from Karen's story, and I shared that. They also may have multiple births with an increased risk of premature delivery. So now we're talking about low birth weight babies.
Mm-hmm.
All from the IVF, all these huge risks. So beyond the medical risks, all those complications, the process of investing all that money, I'll share that as well in a moment, time and the hope in conventional allopathic medical fertility treatment, it puts severe stresses on a couple relationship and resources. If we go into, for example, what some of these procedures cost, many insurance plans, they don't really provide coverage.
That's right.
For menstrual allopathic fertility treatment, and IVF is very expensive. On average, nationally, a fresh IVF cycle tends to cost $12,000 before the medication.
Wow.
And this typically runs another $3,000 to $5,000 to include the medications that she's injecting into her fat deposits constantly, which is painful. I have to inject herself every day and then see 10 pounds gained weight in about 3 to 5 days, all of these things, okay? So after all the suffering and the financial strain, IVF results in that surprising low rate of live births, you know? The Lancet published a research study in which it stated that less than 14% of women who undergo IVF treatment achieve their dream of giving birth to a live baby. Less than 14%.
That's low.
Very.
Wow.
Very.
Great information, Dr. Jaleesa, you are sharing with us. Source Nation, you are listening and watching live right here on SRN Live Television. We are with Dr. Jaleesa Hernandez, and of course, I am your host, Kathy B. We are speaking tonight on IVF, which is fertility. Some women are now considering IVF to have children, and Dr. Jaleesa is giving us some very good information in reference to that. Now, Dr. Jaleesa, we talked about cost of IVF, and you mentioned that really there could be up towards $12,000 and then maybe $3,000 once you include the medication. You talked about women, once they are actually injecting themselves, they're gaining weight. Some have had the unfortunate loss of a baby, so miscarriage can happen during the process also. I want to move on, if we can, and just talk about the mental state. Of course, I conceived naturally. I had both my children naturally, and I didn't have to use any type of fertility drugs or medicine to have them. But the mental state, you shared with Karen's story and her husband, and he said that he didn't want to see her go through that. Talk to us a little bit about what you experienced with Karen and her husband and maybe other couples that have tried IVF and weren't successful. Talk to us about the mental state.
With much of the patients that I've received, it's been where it either didn't take, the IVF didn't take, or they had that loss of the miscarriage.
Okay.
So by the time they come to me, which every patient that has come to me for fertility pretty much has been that they've gone another route and I'm the last resort, their last hope, in other words, because they've tried other avenues. You find them just looking and scraping for that hope. There's the distress, the sadness that they come in with when they start sharing their stories, because my first thing is, please tell me your story.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to let them share and open up some of those wounds, unfortunately, so that I could understand how to further help them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the challenge there, with that desperation as well and that severe desire of wanting this family to be with the person that they love. So that's really what I've encountered the most. But I do everything in my power to make them see that there is hope. If I've been able to help so many in the past, I don't quit until I make sure that you get pregnant. That's what I say. I'm here until you to make sure you get pregnant. Right. I don't leave them until they do. Yeah. And so that's where it lies. The journey is a beautiful one.
It is.
Yes, because it's one, bringing them closer together, all of these things that that come into play. Sometimes it could be even an emotional buried root cause that is preventing her body from really taking on and having the house ready for baby, having the womb ready for baby. So I discuss all of that also within my book. I touch upon the emotions that tend to affect fertility and all of that.
Okay.
All of that comes into play.
Love that. And if you will, share with Source Nation, what do you actually do when the couples are in your office and they have stated that they've tried IVF, this has not worked? If you will, share some of the steps that you take the couples through in order for them to achieve a successful birth.
Wonderful question, because it's not just helping a woman get pregnant or helping that couple get pregnant. It's making sure that that pregnancy goes full term as well.
Right.
Wonderful. Exactly. Wonderfully put. So in my consult examination of the two of them in a naturopathic medical approach, of course, I'm a holistic iridologist, so I focus on seeing imbalances within the body through the iris of the eye. And so as they share with me their story, it could be anything from she has blocked tubes, or she only has one fallopian tube and had to have one removed, or he had low sperm count, and so on and so forth. Many different challenges. So in that, I have to then bring together an herbal therapy program to focus on what their specific challenge is. If I'm dealing with a man with a low sperm count, we need to double that in 30 to 45 days. If I'm dealing with a man that has abnormally formed sperm, I need to bring in natural therapies that make sure that there's an oval-shaped head, to make sure that there's a tail, to make sure that the tail's not crooked, because all of those factors can cause her to reject the sperm.
Okay.
So there are many factors there, and I discussed that in the chapter on men's health. With the woman, it could be anything from weakened uterine walls. Why? She went through the IVF and is now coming to me, and she had two miscarriages. Her uterus became weakened from the first IVF cycle and then couldn't even retain the second pregnancy. So now I have to work with natural herbal therapies and even food, diet changes of things that they need to bring into the body to strengthen and balance with the woman, strengthen those uterine walls, unblock the fallopian tubes, make sure that her eggs are producing the eggs that they should, make sure that she's not taking painkillers during her period every month, because she gets cramps every month. I also discuss luteinized follicle syndrome, which is something that sets in when a woman is taking ibuprofen every single month for menstrual cramps. And many women don't take into account that that's something that is very detrimental to fertility. If I'm dealing with a woman that has uterine fibroids or has endometriosis, hormonal imbalances that are, these challenges are caused by hormonal imbalance like estrogen dominance. Again, I'm comprising a natural herbal therapy program and making diet changes and lifestyle changes to make sure that we correct that hormonal balance so that she is fertile. So many things with the man, if he has low testosterone, bringing in herbal therapies and changing his diet to where he has that high level of good testosterone and good balance, not too much estrogen in him, so that he can help her with conception. It's all of that is entailed. And I share all of those aspects in here.
Yes. I love that. I love that. I love the fact that, you know, once they've gone through IVF, that there is still hope there to where they can conceive naturally. I love the fact that you've been able to help couples successfully have children in a natural way. As we are winding tonight's conversation up, let's talk about some of the things that the couple must do in order to have a successful birth. What are some of the things that you're sharing with the couples that they need to do prepare?
Successful birth. So in other words, helping to carry the woman to full term.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the question?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So I even discussed that, how there are certain foods that she needs to. So after they've conceived, great. I also work and continue to work with her through those 9 months to make sure that we, again, as we were stating, have her carry to full term. Making sure that she's not intaking certain foods that may bring high levels of mercury into the body that can cause neural tube defects. Making sure that her stress levels are low, Kathy. Oh, how I want my ladies to be so stress-free as much as possible. Even explaining on a loving spiritual level how not to allow everyone to come to them with negative news and things of that sort, because baby absorbs everything. After baby's in that house, what I call the house, that womb, that beautiful center of core of her body, baby absorbs, feels, hears everything.
Yes.
And so all love and affection, I require that husband be, or even if he's not a husband, her partner, be very affectionate and loving, that there's always touching, even if there's not a lot of intimacy, because I do recommend in the first 3 months for them to refrain a bit from intercourse. After 3 months, it's considered kind of like the safe zone where that's a good thing. And I do recommend that they definitely continue to be sexual. I tell them to wait those first 3 months. But once I know that a woman has conceived, there are also little tips that I recommend. I don't recommend that she mop. I don't recommend that she vacuum, because when we do those types of acts, we tend to clench our pelvic muscles. And I want that to be loose. I don't want her to clench and suck in her stomach and any of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Housework would be light things like dishes and things of that sort. I recommend them not to do strenuous exercise in the first 3 months. So the first 3 months for me, when she does become pregnant, are crucial. She's to literally baby herself.
Yes.
Literally, and my patients can tell you that I tell them, okay, it's time for you now to baby yourself. And with the husband there in the consult, by the way, she cannot mop and she can't for the next 3 months. And he's just, okay, she can do dishes, she can iron, but that's about it.
Yeah.
Anything that's stress-free. She's now not to rush in the mornings. I say, if you're used to waking up at 6:30, well, now you're going to take it easier and wake up 15 minutes earlier. Little things like that, because those first 3 months, again, are crucial. I don't want her to miscarry again. She needs to carry full term. So that's that. I love for them to incorporate light exercise after the 3 months. I like for my pregnant girl to only look pregnant from the front, not from behind, so baby will absorb everything. And during those 9 months, I put them on a natural herbal prenatal. I don't recommend the chemical prescribed ones, and I tell them, bring this to your conventional gynecologist, your conventional doctor. I'll work together with him or her so that they know what you're using. And I don't like them to take the prescription prenatals, because many of them contain certain chemicals and alum sometimes that causes them to have the morning sickness that they shouldn't be having.
Mm-hmm.
And so on. So we want baby to have everything as natural and as pure as possible.
I love it. Love it. I love it. Well, Dr. Dulson, an amazing conversation. Thank you so much for sharing in vitro with us this evening. I am sure that the men and women of Source Nation appreciate it as well. I know I normally do something at the very beginning. I get you to introduce yourself. I was excited about tonight's conversation, so I do apologize. But if you will, just share with Source Nation and everyone watching tonight here on SRN Live Television a little bit about you, and then we'll close the show.
Thank you so much. Well, I am Dr. Julissa Hernandez, naturopathic doctor, practicing now for 23 years. As of May 1st, 2018, opened my first practice in May 1st, 1995, and honored to be here on Source Radio Network, and am a teacher of natural medicine and international speaker of natural medicine, radio and television personality, and also very well known for being on the nationally syndicated radio show, The Michael Bazin Show, when it was live and on for its 9 years as their resident naturopathic doctor, and then honored to have been picked up by Kathy and be now your resident naturopathic doctor.
Yes.
And I'm honored to be on this health journey with all of you. Thank you,
awesome. Well, Dr. Julissa, again, thank you so much. And, of course, you know, we always end our conversations either with a tip or maybe mm-hmm. some advice that we have not shared in tonight's conversation. If you wish to contribute, would love for you to do so at this time.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you, Kathy. Many aspects regarding fertility are gone blindly by couples. Even your occupation can be a factor with regards to your fertility. And I do share those tips and insights as well here. Everything that you could imagine has been untouched or undiscussed with regards to fertility. And you can all find my information and my new book at drjulissa.com. That's drjulissa.com in English and Spanish editions on Amazon, The Naturopathic Approach to Fertility. And please know that I am always working with even long-distance patients via Skype, Facebook Messenger video, or phone consults. If you desire for me to take this baby journey with you, it would be an honor for me to do so. So reach out to my office, and I'm at your service.
Awesome. Dr. Julissa, again, thank you so much for being here tonight and definitely giving us some wonderful and great information in reference to in vitro. Tonight's conversation was definitely needed, and thank you so much. We look forward to having you back here in the studio again next week. Be blessed.
Be blessed. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Well, well, Source Nation, you heard it right there from Dr. Julissa Hernandez. Of course, tonight's conversation was all about in vitro. For more information on Dr. Julissa, you definitely can go out to Kathy B., SRN Live Television, which is our main station page, SRN Live Television, and tune in every single Thursday for more important information. Again, the book that we spoke from tonight is Dr. Julissa's book, which is A Naturopathic Approach to Fertility. Pick it up. Great information there. Guys, thank you again for watching us. We'll be back here next week for more great conversations and dynamic information to share. Have a great evening. Be blessed.